Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here this evening. Tonight, we are going to be continuing our topic of mental health, anxiety, stress, and we are going to add on PTSD. What does this really mean? What do these words mean for you? What does that CPT code always mean about? And how can we look at this differently and say, is this a problem with my being and I need to, quote, fix it, and there is a drug that's going to change my chemistry and make me all good, or put me back in a box because I seem to be energetically out of it, or even still, it's going to make me the person that everyone else wants me to be. Let's think about that for a minute. When we think about stress, it's us saying we want to find our place in the world. When we think about anxiety, sometimes we have a fear or a loss. When we think about bipolar, we say, oh, that's mania. Maybe it's the soul speaking. Maybe it's the energetic person inside that's trying to get out. Maybe it's someone just feeling that they're just not being heard. So why are we medicating it? Why are we putting it back in the box? Society? Is it people around us that are saying you can't act that way in this society? Is it the herd effect where everybody needs to walk, talk, and chirp at the same frequency? Well, let's talk about that. Today, my guest is Dr. Mary Friedman Ryan. Her book is Healing Anxiety, a Tibetan Medicine Guide to Healing Anxiety, Stress, and PTSD. Dr. Mary, thank you so much for joining us. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Oh, Dr. Jeanette, good evening, and thank you for having me. I feel honored to be on your show.
Oh, thank you so much for joining us. So don't you think, you know, what are your thoughts on all that? Because I think that's my thoughts, and I so much feel that all of these things that are going on within our minds, our bodies, our spirits, and our soul right now are things trying to eke out, and the more they try to eke out and cause what we would call disruption of a society, disruption of your relationships, disruption of your the way people foresee you is always this drugged down type society, yes?
Oh, Dr. Jeanette, absolutely. And to me, with my training in Tibetan medicine, you know, 6 years in the Himalayas, I really came to absorb a different understanding of consciousness, you know. So say someone comes into my clinic and they've got anxiety or PTSD or, you know, stress, like we all have stress. Right. I try to get them to think about, why is this happening for you? You know, what is this opportunity you have? You know, and how can we be grateful for this moment to really discover an aspect of ourselves that maybe we've been ignoring or repressing? You know, if you think of a jack-in-the-box, you know, anxiety in Tibetan medicine, it's sort of like, well, you know, what are the emotions you've been stuffing down? And suddenly the anxiety, you know, implodes and explodes and the jack-in-the-box pops up and says, look at me, you've got to pay attention to me, you can't ignore me any longer, you know, that sort of thing. And so, Dr. Jeanette, I agree with you completely. There's this sort of one-size-fits-all in our society. That's heartbreaking if you don't fit into it. Causes you lots of stress. Causes us, you know.
It drives me crazy, the CPT codes. You know, I think the evidence-based medicine and the concept of, we're now going to do all this electronic stuff, you know, electronic medical records, it has been to the detriment where people are saying, oh, no, it's the best thing ever. You don't know what you're talking about. But really, in my sense, I feel it's much more of a box society, and now we're push the button. It's almost like a vending machine. Hey, I have this, push the button, and out it comes, you know? And I think,
absolutely.
You know, and I think that's a disservice to people that are saying, well, maybe you're not quite hearing me. You know, a lot of times we have people who say, I'm in pain, and Lord knows where the pain aspects have been these days, but they really don't identify with it. They don't know what it means. They don't know how to explain it otherwise, so they use the generic term, I'm stressed, I have pain, this hurts, and then it's up to a sense of a medical test to quantify it or qualify it by showing it on an x-ray and pointing to it, here it is, or showing on a machine, here it is, and then we're going to push that back in, fix that, or screw that back together, and then magically everything's going to be okay, right?
Yes, and that's also the sort of approach where, you know, if only we ingest the right thing, we'll be okay. So that's, you know, the blue pill, the orange pill, the white pill sort of thing.
Right.
And there's nothing about diet, behavior, nothing about developing healthy habits of mind, you know. And Dr. Jeanette, you know, in Tibetan medicine, something I really love is that, first of all, we're seen as all of us being connected, you know.
Right.
For example, when I was working with Dr. Dadan and training with her, you know, she's a Tibetan doctor, personal physician to His Holiness, the Dalai Lama. She said an amazing thing to me that really changed my idea of healing. And that is, she said, you know, when you think about yourself and you're sick, think about all beings being happy. When you cultivate this idea of selflessness and compassion and looking outside of yourself, you won't be sick for that moment. So what she's saying is, say someone comes into the clinic and they're suffering from anxiety and depression. You know what she says? She says, go out and help somebody who is in a worse situation than you. And actually, this actually happened. So a Tibetan refugee came into her clinic. Someone who had lost a child to Chinese soldiers who threw everybody out of their homes in Tibet, you know, when Tibet became occupied by China, threw everybody out of the home, stabbed a young toddler who then died. And so this mother has suffered from anxiety, depression, and PTSD for some years and came into the Tibetan clinic in Dharamsala, the seat of, you know, the Tibetan government in exile now, you know, where His Holiness the Dalai Lama lives. And so this Tibetan refugee woman, this woman in her 40s, came in and said, I am inconsolable. I have PTSD. I have stress. I will never be the same again. I will never overcome this. And then Dr. Dadan Jamling said to her, I want you to go out, and I want you to find a mother like you that's lost not one child, but two. And then I want you to go out, and I want you to talk to everybody in the village who has lost a child. Mm-hmm. Maybe you develop a special tea time every afternoon where you get together. You must solve this problem for everybody because you are not alone. Mm-hmm. You are one with everyone in this village. You are not one person. You are every mother that has lost a child in our village. And indeed, that woman went out and she found not only Tibetan women, but Indian women as well. One Indian mother had lost her daughter who had been set on fire by her mother-in-law because the mother-in-law was unhappy how this woman was acting, how this woman was treating her son. So there are, you know, so when I think about PTSD and stress and anxiety and depression, I always think about how our consciousness is linked with other humans and that happiness involves being of service. And the moment that you're in service and you're helping another person, you're no longer thinking about yourself and you take away an aspect of the selfishness, excuse me, but in Tibetan medicine we would say that, sort of the self-involvedness of depression and anxiety. And Dr. Jeanette, between you and I, there's plenty of work to do out there.
You know, it's interesting when you said that. I think of sometimes in the realm of angels. And I just had a, I was walking through with you, and you almost think of someone that has lost someone or something, and they mm-hmm. are, they have a dark shroud on, they are laying on the floor. And then when you said about the woman going out, and then I would see her standing up and going outside and meeting up with another, and then her shroud is no longer black. It's like turning a little gray, and she connects with another person. So then together, those two join hands, and then they connect. In other words, it's a connection going forward. So what I really find in healing and your connection to other people, people will say, and we've always said it on this show, we're going to call a pumpkin a 10,000 different ways because everybody is different and everybody recognizes a pumpkin as different. So same thing here. I see it, you know, as with the word connection to other people is sometimes you just, you know, you stand up. Or if you have to crawl, and then you crawl to the next person, you think of it as an energetic battery. When you put two batteries together, they will try to light maybe a light bulb. If you string three batteries together, maybe they will be able to light your house. If you string four together, they will be able to light the community. So it's really that same concept, because we don't recognize that we as physical beings are energetic beings. We have no concept of that in American health or American systems or whatever you want to call it, give it whatever label you wish, but we have no concept of that whatsoever. But yet that our energetic, when we, you know, when we walk into a place and we're yelling and screaming, do you think everybody turns around? That's an energy exchange, you know, and people don't get that, I think.
Yeah, it's very interesting what you say. And in Tibetan medicine, or what I would call Tibetan Buddhist psychology, is that depression and anxiety and diseases of the mind are two things. There's a physical aspect and that we can talk about as well. You know, certainly there's a physical imbalance, but there's a mental imbalance. And part of that mental imbalance, Dr. Janet, is just what you're talking about, that the person feels separate from everybody. And how to bridge that gap, how to bring that, take away that sense of separation and feel a unity with humanity. And I think, Dr. Janet, that there is so much isolation in our and alienation in our culture. You know? But, if, you know, Tibetan medicine does have a very long sophisticated biological, physical understanding of anxiety, stress, and PTSD as well. You know, so in Tibetan medicine, you have the psychological aspect that, you know, bridging that sense of separation, you know, developing compassion, what they call bodhicitta, you know, going beyond yourself. You know, in the Tibetan medical text, they say, if you cultivate bodhicitta, which goes beyond yourself and is about empathy and compassion, you will never be sick. You can't be sick if you're serving other people. I just love that concept. But then, of course, you know, when people actually come into my clinic, I help them figure out their constitution. There are three main different constitutions in Tibetan medicine because, of course, one size doesn't fit all, you know. And then I give them particular meditations to help them. Diet, you know, behavior, you know. That sort of thing, and, you know, Tibetan healing exercises. And, of course, you know, the diet would be herbs and foods that suit their constitution, you know, because we're not all the same. We're all different. It's not a one-size-fits-all.
Well, if we think about even a plant that we put out in the yard, you have to give it water, you have to give it sunlight, and you have to give it the ground to grow in. So we think about humans, we say, oh, whatever, and you don't even pay an attention to it. Yet, you know, how many drive-thrus did you do today? I mean, the area I live in, everybody eats out three meals a day. And it, to me, that is just so strange, you know. It's like I just don't get it, you know.
Yeah. Oh, no, I don't get it at all. But my kids, you know, we grew up in the countryside with them, which was lucky.
Right.
And but I do remember a young boy coming to our house, and he stayed for dinner. And we sat down for dinner, you know, and held hands and said, you know, we're grateful for this food. And went around the table. Everybody was talking about their day. And then this young boy looked at me and he said, "Do you do this every night?" And I said, "Well, I don't know, probably about 5 nights a week. Sometimes people are missing because of sports or whatever." He was absolutely incredulous and then ended up spending a lot of time at our house. And I have to say, I haven't been the perfect parent, what human is. But, you know, chop wood, carry water, have structure and softness. You know, a place to land. In Tibetan medicine, in fact, they talk about a lack of routine really leading to anxiety. You know, if you lose the routine of sleep and you lose the routine of when you eat, forget about it. You're going to have anxiety.
Let's talk a little bit about the meridians, about the energy flow of the body. We've spoken many times about acupuncture because I do acupuncture and also Chinese medicine. And when we speak about it, let's speak about the meridians of the body and how that energetic flow is, as many people will say, I need to go get acupuncture because I need to have my energetic flow contained, you know, or whatever. And then some people will say, you know, I must be blocked somewhere. We need to unblock it. But then it's just they still have that concept of American medicine, unblock it and then I'll be good to go, without understanding how it works in the first place, how you nurture it through life, and how you learn to flow with it versus to flow against it. So I think that will take us this whole show, because when we learn to nurture it, we learn to honor ourselves first and our place in this universe. And we learn to go with it. We learn that things happen, you know, and it's just our response to it. And I think when we learn to just be able to ask for help when we need it is really when you reach out and you're able to have acupuncture, moxibustion, or let's have a change in my diet, or let's say I need to move to a different area, or let's say I need to quit my job, or hey, you know, these people are really just not good for me and I need to move on, you know. So all of these things in our world are intertwined, yet we still want to just say, okay, I have PTSD, okay, I'm going to go to them and they're going to put needles in and I'm good to go. Nah, not so quick, right?
No, not at all. In fact, I think self-care is the key to keeping the acupuncture meridians, the flow in the channels, clear. And to me, self-care, it involves massage, you know, maybe with your loved one. You do massage on each other and you do sort of, you know, the warming of the points, you know, that moxibustion. So that would be self-care to me, that you can do at home, or you can go to someone and you know, sort of like, you know, an oil change. You know, you change the oil on your car, you know. And so there is a maintenance program that's very important. But also, you know, Dr. Jeanette, so when in Tibetan medicine, you know, they talk about this basic energy, this energetic lung energy, L-O-O-N-G is the way you pronounce it, lung or wind energy, right? And that's what flows through the meridians to them, flows through the channels. So wind, if you think of the concept of wind, you know, you can't see the wind, right? But you can see the effects of the wind, you know, in our environment. You see the trees blow, and you see dandelion puffs, you know, floating along and that sort of thing. You can't see it, but you can detect its movement and you can see how it affects you, affects the environment. Well, we also have lung wind in our body, yes? And, you know, what is that movement in our body? It's the movement of, you know, toxic products. You know, it's the movement, it's bowel movements, it's urination, it's the flowing of blood through the channel. But it's also the movement of the consciousness. The seat of our consciousness flows throughout the body. We say the mind rides the wind, which I think is a really interesting concept. And if the mind rides the wind, then, you know, where is the mind? Well, the mind is contained throughout the body, and in fact, we store emotions throughout our body. And in fact, emotions, the mind that's riding this wind, this energetic sort of vital force, right, that flows through our channels.
Right.
That mind, like say you get scared, what happens, right? You go, and the channels get blocked. You know, your heart stops, or maybe it starts beating very quickly, and the flow of the lung, actually, of the wind, of the lung, gets faster and flows beyond and spills over channels it shouldn't be in, right? And the mind starts to race. So what we say is the mind rides this vital force, and the mind, therefore, since it rides this vital force that flows through all our organs and both energetic organs and, you know, the physical organs themselves, our mind can affect the body. So if you're having negative, fearful, and deleterious thoughts, you know, evil thoughts, you know, day in and day out, well, that's going to affect your body, and you're going to cause disease in your body by your you know, the toxic quality of your thoughts will destroy your body. But also,
it's almost,
you know, just
so it's almost like putting a cap on it. Yeah.
You know, how can you cultivate? Like you say, there's the garden of the body, right? Putting,
right,
you know, wonderful water and nutrients into your body, you know, the way you would a plant. But also nourishing your thoughts. For example, there are all sorts of Tibetan meditations that I use in my clinic that help the mind so that it brings freshness and vitality to the body. You know how, like, if you're happy, then you have lots of energy, right? Because that's,
right,
you're feeding your vital force with your consciousness, your thoughts. But if you're sad, you know, depression, actually, so in Tibetan medicine, if someone comes in my clinic and they say, I am really tired, I can't get out of bed, I know that they're depressed, you know? I know they have a lot of sad thoughts that are dragging them down,
right?
You know? So that's where, like, the mind affects the body. Because the mind rides the lung, it rides the wind, it rides the vital force flowing through all those channels. But also, if we're throwing toxic waste into our body, like McDonald's food, too much alcohol, you're smoking cigarettes, and gosh, what else? Living in an environment with a ton of dust, that's also going to affect the body and the mind, you know? Mm-hmm. So the body affects the mind. The mind affects the body.
You know, it's interesting when we talk about it because I almost liken it to, let's say, a woman, she's in a hurry in the morning and trying to get all of her kids out to school, and they all grab something quick on the way to eat in the car. Then she gets to work. Gets to work and then has her coffee for the morning, and then she has a mid-morning meeting and she's got a raging headache. But then she'll hurry up and shove down some fast food because she, quote, has to eat because she's starving. And then get on to the afternoon, and then things in the afternoon are irritable, just in a rotten mood, or back starts to hurt, or maybe headache gets much worse. Then she goes to pick up the kids, and then it's yelling and screaming, and then they're all into kind of tivvy. Then for dinner, of course, it's how can you shut them down or pacify them? It's called get them all what they want, and it's called takeout food. How quick can you get them home, put them to bed? Now, we know women in this world, there are millions of them, that is their daily, that is their daily existence.
Oh,
and
absolutely. Absolutely.
That existence,
and I was guilty of it myself.
Different.
And yeah, I mean, I have at times noticed, you know, am I living consciously, you know? So my children now have left home. They're in college, you know, wonderful kids. And but there were times where when I was working full time, where things just spilled over and got out of control,
right,
where I was throwing pizza at it way too many nights in a row. And, you know, financially, when we could do it, I would always pull back and work part-time. And so I have great compassion for those mothers. You know, most people don't have that opportunity to work part-time, you know, and really slow down everything for the family, be an anchor for everyone, you know, to a hub to gather around. And that's too bad. You know,
well, I think also,
but,
too,
so
that's where
I think
a lot of
small ways,
anxiety
I think
comes.
But I think there are small ways you can make life changes, you know, where you can bring you can bring leftovers from the night before to work. You can do a lot of cooking on the weekends, you know. You can wake up in the morning just that much earlier and sit down with the kids for breakfast. That's what we did. That was a solution for us. We found, you know, at some points in their lives, everybody's home for breakfast, but not for dinner. Right. Let's get up early and eat breakfast. And it became a wonderful tradition. So it's finding those soft landings for the body and mind, you know. And you know, also it goes back, you know, Dr. Jeanette, it's just like you said, it goes back to the fact that, you know, we all are one. We are one. So if we can really connect to one another, that's going to be a healing experience in and of itself.
You know, it's interesting when my kids used to go to school, my daughter used to wait for the bus and she'd have her orange juice in her container to drink. And yeah. People would say, oh, I want to drink your orange juice. And she'd say, no, you don't. It has my herbs in it. You know, so she would have her herbs and stuff in her orange juice, you know, going to first grade.
Wow.
And
yeah.
My kids were just, we did do all that we ate at home. We just didn't. I had too many kids. I had too much other stuff to do. And it wasn't in the budget to be eating out all the time. And
yeah, same here. A blessing.
And I really, yeah. And I think kind of in a way, the kids have learned that because now they're in their 20s and 30s and takeout food, it's like, well, we don't do that. We don't have birthday cakes because we never used to eat sugar like that. And, you know, we just don't have all of that stuff that some of those people do. I mean, my kids are not soda drinkers, you know, stuff like that. So I really think it's about what you expose your children to and how they can carry that forward. So many people say, oh, but she's crying when I go past McDonald's. Well, go a different street. You know, I mean, it's like, I think sometimes we allow our own stress and anxiety to show up in our children by just, you know, when we feel something and we have a response, we show that same feeling and response to our kids, and then they end up repeating the same pattern. So I really think it is about showing how we're connected, but show the other way. You know, if you are stressed and you need a drink, you don't need to put it, you know, in a sippy cup or in the car holder, you know, just don't have it around the kids. I live in the South. Everybody here drinks. I mean, my golly, kids drink, you know, in middle school here, and it's just a given. Oh, well, mom left it on the table, so I finished it. And I'm going, oh, okay then. But I think it's a different way that we have to become more responsible as people. We've really become very lax and allowed society-driven to affect us and to set our parameters. And we've also allowed more or less government to say what we can and can't do with ourselves. I had spoken to you before the show and I said that everybody believes that health and happiness are a privilege. Well, they are a privilege, but it's all up to you what you do with it. And I really feel that healthcare is not healthcare. Healthcare is crisis care. So if you were given health and happiness, which is the sun, the moon, the stars, the grass, the greens, the flowers, whatever, that's health and happiness. What did you do with it? You know, if you chose not to engage in it, if you choose to destroy it, if you choose not to recognize its power and its energy, that's your choice. And now you're screaming you want, quote, health care. Well, health care is not the same thing. Healthcare is crisis oriented in the U.S. Period. There's no other way about it. You can discuss that all you want. It's crisis care. Something hurts. I'm going there. They're going to fix it, and I'm going to continue on my own same path. So really, what privilege are we given? We're given the existence in the earth, and what we do with it is up to us. So it's really about us deciding that.
Absolutely. I mean, Dr. Jeanette, it really is a good point, you know, this crisis care. You know, if you look at the cost of health care in the United States, it's one of the highest costing health care in the world. And yet we have an infant mortality rate that's comparable to South Africa. You know, we're sort of, I think it's number 22 in the World Health Organization's hierarchy of, you know, the most healthy countries. You know, Venezuela has a better healthcare system than we do. You know, it's a very strange times in the U.S. And as we know, it comes back to for profit. You know, how can you have a healthcare system? How can health, how can hospitals be based on profit? It's absolutely insane.
Right.
Just, you know.
But even what you just said, you know, about the infant mortality rate, I think what's really basing a lot of the world on is self-preservation. Everybody's worried about themselves. In other words, I want healthcare, I want this, I want that. But yet when children are unborn, we don't even think about them. We don't even conceptually care or even pay attention until they're at home in the crib, and then you have to figure out, you know, what kind of crisis you're in then. So if we really think about that, we think about how did you nurture, how did you grow your plant, your child, while it was in the gestation time when it was most vitally important. So really it's all about self-preservation, I think, this world that we're in. And not only that, it's really about crisis care, self-preservation. There are many out there who are changing this. So please do not feel offended, listeners, that you say, oh, that's not me, that's not right. Yes, there are many out there that are working to change that. I'm just making it as a generalized blanket statement that some of these instances appear as such. And I think it is up to us to be able to change that. So Dr. Mary, I think, can you share a little bit about when you talk about moxibustion and about the meridians for how to treat anxiety, stress, and PTSD. What does that look like to a client? And they say, man, I'm just really out of it. What or how could I get other help that I haven't experienced yet?
Well, you know, Dr. Jeanette, it's interesting. Something I like to tell listeners that, you know, is just an immediate relief. And that is, you know, if you're in the midst of a panic attack, there are Tibetan healing exercises for this, right? And if I'm going to boil them down, you know, in the Tibetan Buddhist medical literature, it's called doing prostrations to the medicine Buddha, which are very like push-ups, but of course involve intention and prayer, right? And you're prostrating yourself to the medicine Buddha and, you know, asking for recovery, asking for balance and health. But so if you are in the midst of a panic attack, drop down and do 10 push-ups, because what happens in a panic attack from the Tibetan medical viewpoint is that you have a contraction of the lung, of the wind, of the vital force,
right,
a contraction where it is trapped in areas of the body and circulation has stopped. And also it's trapped, you know, the mind is moving at 100 miles an hour, and yet the chest is completely shut off, right? So you sort of have the head walking around on a stick without any connection to the body. So you drop down and you do 100 prostrations to the medicine Buddha. You can look that up, you know, on the web or, you know, buy my book. But if you, you know, I've interpreted that also just simply, you know, for Westerners, the simplest way to think about it is as push-ups. And what that does is that gets the blood flow going, it gets the sweat going, it gets you breathing deeply, because the mind is intimately connected to the breast, to the breast as well, the whole chest area. That is your heart-mind. You've got a blockage there. You've got to, like, move that energy, push, and get circulation going around that heart chakra, right? That energy center around your heart mind. And there's also something else you can do. Because the mind is intimately connected to the breath, you can deeply breathe, right? I'm sure everybody out there who's had anxiety has heard this many times from your, you know, alternative practitioners. You know, breathe deeply, breathe in, counting to 10, you hold to 10, and then you breathe out for 10. But there's also something else you can do. And that is, in terms of the Tibetan Buddhist understanding of consciousness and anxiety, there's an ancient secret that says you cannot sing and be anxious at the same time. So if you are in the midst of a panic attack, start singing.
Mm-hmm.
Start singing, oh my God, here it comes. That stupid panic attack. I don't know. I can't sing at all. So, you know.
Changes
and, you
the
know,
frequency.
Whether you're tone deaf or not, what it does, it actually raises the consciousness.
Right.
It actually connects the higher consciousness of the brain, which is cycling around and going 100,000 miles an hour, way too fast, to the heart, mind, and the chest. And if you think about your throat, right, think about how stuck it gets in a panic attack, right? So you're opening your throat and you're connecting those two centers. So that's, you know, some Tibetan healing exercises, just watered down, you know, for your show.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, if someone comes into me, we give them herbal medicine. We give them, you know, there are several meditations we choose from that suit their
right.
their constitution. We do aromatherapy. There's a very specific type of long wind incense that soothes the mind. One must simply breathe in the incense, allowing the smoke of the herbs to enter the channels, right? The lung channels,
mm-hmm.
the wind channels. Through the lung membranes. And that's a type of incense that people can buy. Of course, we give lifestyle advice. We're, you know, like, look,
right.
this is your constitution. You're eating exactly the wrong food for your constitution. You're doing exactly the wrong behaviors for your constitution. So we really help them to know themselves because everybody's different, you know?
You know, it's interesting when you say about the incense. I'm a Catholic, and in the 50s and 60s, you know, when I used to play
yeah.
the organ in church and sing with the priests for the Latin Mass, they always had the incense, and I can remember that distinct smelling of that incense.
Mm.
It was a very soothing incense, and they always used it at times when you really needed to be connected to something. It was always at times of weddings. It was at times of funerals, and we also
yeah.
used it at Lent a lot. And that was times when you really needed to. In other words, it was almost like okay, you're not paying attention in church. We're going to center you. Here comes the incense, you know? And if that
yeah.
didn't work, we're going to go down the aisle with the holy water and we're going to splash it on you, you know? So in other words, there are these instances where we think we have such a different concept of it. But if we look at it, these things are really all connected in different ways. It just shows up with a different label on it, you know, in a religion
yeah.
or in a medicine or whatever it is, that it's really all about connecting. Because if you smell that church incense anywhere outside of church and you've grown up like that, you know distinctly, it smells like church, you know, and you know what that smells like, you know.
Yes, absolutely. And smell's connected to memory. It's connected to some of our highest
mm-hmm.
thoughts. And they consider mm-hmm. smell the, you know, the most subtle sense, the sense that is intimately connected to the vital force.
And there's times when people are even doing meditation, they'll have incense because they feel it connects them. So that connection is what you're using as a vehicle to be able to say, I'm safe, I'm here, I'm connected. To whatever
yeah.
that might be, your meditation or your church or whatever. And I think it's interesting you said about the diet. I was doing this temporary
yeah.
position in the winter. It was November, December, and January this past year. And in the facility that I worked in, it was at a florist, and it was very cold, and it was damp, and they had coolers, and they kept everything ice cold. So I was there like 10 hours a day ice cold. And the wind would blow on my back because they had the, you know, the AC going to keep it really, really cold. And I can remember I got so sick. I got very, I had bone pain like nobody's business. It was all of these cold symptoms. And I also didn't feel very good. So I was eating some drying things. I was eating things like pretzels and crackers because I could put them behind my desk and no one would see them. And it was very drying. So in
yeah.
essence, what I did was I cooled down my body and contracted it. And I also dried it out. So what had happened was then
yeah.
I had no fluids. So I had lack of fluids, I had lack of energy flow, and it was not good. It took me two months to recover after that to what I would say, as we always share with clients, is you have to warm up with foods, you have to warm up your body with energy and oils, and you need to rehydrate your body, not just with water, but also with the vital fluids again. And if I had stayed in that environment more than those 3 months, I probably would have had a serious illness because I was so contracted and so dried through, it wouldn't have been a good thing. So I think that's really a perfect example of how people can recognize what or how your environment and what you're doing can play into this concept. If you're able to say, ooh, that happened around that same time and I never recognized that. So I think that's really important to share.
Yeah, absolutely, Dr. Jeanette. And I think about it this way. Say someone comes in with pneumonia, right? And it's summer. I automatically go to this. I go to, you know what? I bet they're working in an air-conditioned environment and drinking cold drinks. So they are being assaulted with icy cold inside and out. And that level of cold, it actually generates phlegm. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And leads to illness, you know, and of course, it also dampens the immune system so that you're more open to colds. You really have to keep that, you know, that internal warmth and balance going. So with someone like that, I say, you know, I want you to cut out cold drinks. I want you to cut out raw foods for a while. If you eat too many raw foods, that creates a great deal of mucus in the stomach.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you work on warming them internally and also putting a sweater on. And something else you want to do in the summertime, say, I mean, we all live in air conditioning in the summer is, you know, we're coming upon that season. Something you can do is to make sure that the transition between that cold internal environment and going outside isn't too extreme. So when you're in the air conditioning, just have a shawl over you, or a light sweater, or long
sleeves. And it depends on where you live, too, because here in the South, we don't ever shut off our AC. Our AC is on 12 months of the year. But also, too, the concept of, I mean, what you just said about raw foods. I'm now, let's see, that was 3 months that I did that work, you know, because I wanted to enjoy flowers for the holiday seasons and help a friend of mine. And after that, it's now been 2 months, and still to this day, raw foods, cannot do it, cannot eat a salad for the life of me, because it just gives you a tremendous stomach ache because you just don't have the enzymes or the energy systems to be able to warm you up enough
to digest. It's rare, you know, and there are different constitutions. There might be someone who runs really hot. That constitution in Tibetan medicine is called Tipa people. Their constitution runs hot. They'd do great with some cooling foods like cucumber, salad. But even with them, not too much, you know. But then, say, Dr. Jeanette, someone like you or me, that would be more the Bagan constitution.
Yeah.
We need more, you know, we need to warm up. We need some warm soups and curries and, you know, herbs that, you know, like ginger tea, you know, with a slight touch of honey would be great for us, you know. That sort of thing. But you're right. You know, we would probably want to keep your constitution, your body, warmed up.
Yeah, it's really different, I think, sometimes, too, to also understand about the seasons, because seasons are so different. And I always laughed at people. I said Whole Foods was the disdain of everybody's energetic bodies, because there's no reason that we need blueberries in January, you know. We really need blueberries when they're in season, you know. And that's the truth, is because we started to get on this kick of, you know, I'm going to do green drinks 12 months out of the year, and then when it comes down to the winter, you're sicker than heck, and you can't understand why. Or you get out to the summer and you say, I just have no energy, the heat is just blasting me. It's because, excuse me, hang on. It's because you've really put yourself out of that sink, out of that balance, by forcing something. It's almost like when I go into the florist and I say, we have all these flowers, and someone will come in, they'll say, do you have so-and-so flower? And I'm like, yeah. And they would say, oh, well, it's out of season, I know, but we still have it. It's because we've now forced things, I think, in the world to appease us again. I guess another self-preservation kind of thing is that we're demanding that we have to have flowers whenever we want them. We have to have foods whenever we want them. We are commanding that everything fit our human needs and wants. And kind of in a way, that's really at the it's really not a great thing for the energy of the world or energy of the earth if you really look at it. And it's not really going to be a survival mechanism. It's going to be it's going to lead to the, you know, things that are just not going to be good. So what we really need to look at is that you eat where you live, what grows where you live, which brought about the organic, you know, and our backyard farming and all that. But still, people are still commanding that they have to have blah, 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 you know, don't you think?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, there are Tibetan prophecies about that. You know, I don't know how woo-woo
right.
we can get.
There
but,
are.
You know, it's really interesting, you know.
Chinese medicine and Ayurvedic the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, Tibetan prophecies, one of them is that at the darkest time, before the influx of the beginning of the Age of Light, rabbits will be having their babies in the winter, meaning all the seasons will be messed up. We'll be living in complete chaos, you know. We'll be eating foods at the wrong time of year. And that's at the lowest, the darkest part of the cycle. But they do feel now, Tibetans, that we're coming into the time of light. You know, another prophecy by Padmasambhava in the 7th century, he said, when the iron bird flies and horses run on wheels, the Tibetan teachings will come home to the land of the red-faced people. So the iron bird flies. That is, in fact, the year of the iron bird, which was, you know, in the 50s. But it's also when the iron bird flies, you know, when airplanes are invented, and when horses run on wheels, when cars are invented. The Tibetan teachings, they now can come out of Tibet, where they have been hidden. These high teachings have been hidden and protected during the dark cycle on Earth. And now these Tibetan teachings can come out and spread throughout the world and come back home to the land of the red-faced people, the natives here, the Native Americans. And in fact, genetically, the Hopi Indians and the Tibetans are related. In migrations that are, you know, 16,000 years old.
You know, it's interesting. I always say on this show, you didn't get dropped from a stork. If you don't think that you're not related to someone else or something else, you need to get it together, people. You know, we've said that so many times on this radio show, you know.
I love it.
You know, if you want to keep yourself a little... You know, if you want to keep yourself in that little box and you want to be able to say you're all self-contained and you're all that you're doing and being and everything, go right ahead. But eventually, I think people will start to say that, you know, ooh, I went there, I sensed that, I felt that, ooh, what did that feel like, ooh, how can I shift it? And I think that's where we're at this point. So, Dr. Mary, I think in closing, I think if you could share a little more information about your book and your website, that would be wonderful.
Oh, well, thank you, Dr. Jeanette. So let's see about my book. I wrote a book, and it's called Healing Anxiety, A Tibetan Medicine Guide to Healing Anxiety, Stress, and PTSD. And I wrote this book with help from the personal physician to His Holiness the Dalai Lama, Dr. Lady Dadon Jamling. And this book was published by my fantastic publishers, Born Perfect, Inc., Ancient Wisdom for Modern Times. And you can buy my book at my publisher's website, bornperfectinc.com. And for information about the incense, you can go to, or, you know, anything, you know, related to the book. You know, there's incense, you know, herbs and all of that. You can go to World Wide Web, healinganxietybook.com. And I hope that people will buy my book or borrow it from the library. It's the first comprehensive book on healing anxiety with Tibetan medicine. And Dr. Jeanette, I wrote it, you know, as we all know, no one makes some money from writing a book. But I write it because I want thousands of people to get this effective information. It's just unbelievable. How effective it is. I would say about 90% of the people that come to me with anxiety are cured. And there's that 10%, I can't help them, I don't know why, it's a mystery, but they'll then come to me and they've found a solution elsewhere. So, you know, or there might be more than anxiety involved. There might be bipolar mania. There might be, you know, there's that sort of thing too. But it's been incredibly helpful.
Well, you know, I think so also too, Dr. Mary, I think it's important to say is that everybody can find something at the time in which it's for them. Even, in fact, today I had another great energy healer that he said, well, when am I coming on the show? And I said, when it's divine timing, and I'll know it, and I'll email you, you know.
I
so
love
just because,
that.
You know, I think sometimes people push other people to, quote, get help, and the people aren't ready for it yet. So I think sometimes society pushes them there, or their other physicians or whatever, or their fear of not getting help or what might happen. And that might be your 10 or 20%. But also, too, I think fear is what might bring us to be able to experience other people and other things that are going on in life. And I think your book is a great example of that. So thank you so much.
Oh, Dr. Jeanette, it's a pleasure meeting you. And I love your radio show. And I feel very, very honored to be here.
I thank you so much for joining us today.
Of course. Thank you, Dr. Jeanette, and talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you. If you'd like to find out more information about Dr. Mary Friedman Ryan, again, her book is Healing Anxiety, a Tibetan Medicine Guide to Healing Anxiety, Stress, and PTSD. Please do check out the book. I promise, even if you feel kind of stressed out or you feel like something's just not working, it's another way to be able to look at your life, the world around you, and to be able to say, you know what? I really don't know much about this, but hey, give it a try. The answer is you can open it up to any page in this book and you could say, that sounds interesting, or say, nah, that's not for me yet. Open up another page. You'll always find something there of interest to read. And to the listeners, it's really not about suffering in silence or being in your little cubbyhole, because if we came to this earth and there are billions of people here, we were meant to be able to just reach out, see others, touch others, hear others, and be able to have an experience. Remember, our lifetime is only about experiences. Hey, we are only in a wardrobe change, so just enjoy the ride. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. Until tomorrow, have a wonderful day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.